Why I've decided to go on this journey of being a founder is because I recognize that the change that I want to see, I cannot create as a investor. And I say that because the companies that are getting funded are not serving my community. So at my core, I am glued to the idea that I want to see people that look like me live a better life.
Hey there, welcome back to Tolu's Notes. On this podcast, we'll explore how young adults invest their time and their money. I also have a newsletter filled with priceless insights for young investors. Subscribe for free at tolusnotes.com. Philip, what's up, brother?
How's it going, man? How's it going?
I'm good. It's been a couple months now, no?
Has been, yes, long overdue, but time to catch up.
Definitely. So I wanted to get you on the show to talk about your experience. I have a lot of friends, and I just feel like you're one of the few that are just going above and beyond to
I appreciate that, man.
As an entrepreneur, let me just lay a couple of let me talk about Philip a little bit, right? So we were part of the same scholarship right out of high school, the Zero Foundation. We can talk about that a little bit more. You were venture capital, and then you left that, and then you just kind of do your own thing now as a startup entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But your company that you're starting also has a really strong mission. So I want to talk about all that stuff. So let's rewind back to like how we met, and then that was like in high school, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's actually crazy when I think about it. It's a beautiful thing when you think about like just the random likelihood of like people connecting and then years later, because that is graduated high school almost low key a decade ago. We're getting close to a decade.
Wow, I never thought about it.
Yeah, it's getting close to a decade. We are 3 years away from that decade mark.
Wow.
And here we are in 2020 chatting about that. So it's crazy when I reflect on that. I hadn't even like thought about that before you mentioned it.
Yeah. And I don't even know how I came across Zero, but something I tell people is that when I was coming out of high school, I applied to everything.
Every scholarship. Same here.
I didn't have a concept of like, I wanted to be out of debt after school. But what I figured out was that free money, it didn't click for me. So by the time I graduated without debt, I got it. But honestly, when I was in the midst of it, I didn't get it.
I would honestly add to that and say that is the exact same thing for me. I spent one semester every single day, like a one class every single day for a semester applying to scholarships.
Wow.
And I remember going into undergrad every single semester with 12K of cash in my pocket, while also not having to pay for school. And by no means had I ever come for money. That was like the most money I ever had. But like, I don't think I actually conceptualized what I was doing until after, when I recognized so many of my friends left with debt and I was walking away with a few thousand dollars every semester.
That was strong. So shout out to the Zero Foundation.
Badass.
you changed our lives. No, seriously, because all my scholarships went to the school, but Zero was the one that kind of came directly to me.
Yeah.
And that also started teaching me about finance also. But yeah, so just going through, let's talk about college a little bit. What did you study when you got to college?
Yeah, I guess for context, I went to Babson College, which is a shameless plug, the number one engineering school in the world. And I say that because I went into undergrad hoping to like be comfortable somewhere down the line enough to start another business. So I went to Babson College, studied finance and entrepreneurship there. I started a business back freshman year of college, and that's partially because it's required, but separately, I recognized I needed to learn a bit more. After starting that business, I recognized that I didn't have an idea I was passionate about. So I spent a lot more time focusing on finance. Every semester, I essentially like took a different leap in a different area of finance. So the first semester was actually a internship that came, well, the first summer was an internship that came through Zeta World Foundation.
Wow.
I was doing a nonprofit finance. After that, I went on to do, next summer was private equity. And then after that, I did commercial finance. So the whole goal for me in undergrad was just trying to figure out what area of finance I enjoyed the most. Dedicated a summer to trying to figure that out every year.
So what are some examples of what you did in each of those fields?
I'll start with the first summer internship, which was the real estate nonprofit one. What we were doing was providing housing to homeless people in the Skid Row area. Now, obviously, to do that, you have to figure out who's going to pay for it, because it's not going to be the homeless people. And the internship was amazing because they essentially allowed me to take a peek under the hood and figure out how do we actually get the grants to pay for these people so that they can have housing, and how do you structure it when they are inside the house? How do you incentivize them to take care of themselves? So it was a lot of not only traditional finance, but also the psychology behind finance. What motivates people? Because when you're dealing with the homeless community in these respective areas, you have to think about, they're not homeless solely because they can't pay for themselves. Sometimes it's because of a mental disability.
Yeah.
And understanding how to talk to people about finances was just like one of those big takeaways from that summer. The next summer was private equity, and that was investing in later stage companies. You mentioned the VC stuff, and the VC stuff is just investing in companies when they are at the earliest stages. Private equity is investing after they reach that, hey, we have product market fit. How do we become the next company that's about to IPO? So we were investing in other asset managers and investing in late stage companies. And that was a blast. I learned a lot and recognized that there's just so much to learn there. And then my final internship was commercial finance at Johnson & Johnson. And what I was doing was I was an intern on the finance team with the oral care department. And that was learning how these companies take a product and try to figure out how do you scale it? How do you find product market fits? Despite like Johnson & Johnson being like a big player in the healthcare space, they had very little like market share in the oral care space. So it was really taking working with a company to see how do you take this big company and add another product that they can sell to the market. So it was just all different areas of how you look at business through the lens of numbers. Just had a blast with every single one, man, honestly.
That sounds like a dream, man. Just
it was, man. I reflect on how privileged I am to have like come across those sorts of opportunities, man. And I am constantly humbled by like what's been presented in front of me.
Like, that's awesome. But like, you didn't stop there. So you graduated and you worked at Initialize. Was that the first company you worked at?
Oh, no. So the first, okay. Wow. Actually, this is the first company I worked at. This says Landmark Partners.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So out of undergrad, I had to decide what area. I got offers in the three respective areas, not from those specific companies, but from other companies in that area. And decided that I really enjoyed the idea of investing in other companies for a lot of reasons. But one being that I knew I wanted to start a company somewhere down the line, and I wanted to understand how people evaluate those companies. So I decided to go and do private equity. And that was at Landmark Partners. I did that for about 2 years, where I was on the quant team, quant/investing team. And we were every single day, like going through spreadsheets, trying to figure out how do you make these deals attractive for the other person on the other end of that table. Had a blast, honestly. Like, I learned so much. Like, I keep thinking about the fact that like I can now like break down a spreadsheet and push something out that clearly articulates like what I want to do. However, with that experience, I recognized that I was so far from the action. And when I say that, I mean that like I was trying to get a better idea of how do you start these companies. We were dealing with companies who had been around for sometimes 100 years, and you're just like, okay, that is so far from where I am right now that I can't see the path to how you got there. So I decided to quit and take a VC job out in California. And I was like myopically focused on early stage. I wanted to like deal with entrepreneurs who were just thinking through this idea, who had nothing but a piece of paper, no product, but they had a vision, and like watching them through my lens of a VC on how they create, make this idea a reality. So decided to leave and went over to Initialized Capital. I joined there as the junior investor on the team, reporting to the four GPs.
Wow, wow. And for those who don't know, Initialized were one of the earliest investors in like Coinbase, Instacart, Flexport, yeah, and those companies.
Patreon, yeah. Initialized has done a great job of investing in some dope companies.
That's amazing. So as a junior, you said you were a junior partner?
No. Oh, I wish.
Okay.
Junior investor.
Junior investor.
Yes. Yeah, no, I was a junior investor there.
And so what was your job like?
I would say it was the most thought-provoking work I've ever done. And I say that because when you're in the early stages, there is no framework for what success looks like. You have to, like, even coming from late stage to early stage, like in the late stage, I can give you an answer based on what the numbers say. In the early stage, there are no numbers to talk about. So you have to figure out how do our visions align? Like Initialized is looking for the next $1 billion company, and this person is trying to bring a product to the world that they think can change the world. So a lot of the work was really like talking to a lot of entrepreneurs, digging through, trying to like punch holes in whatever they're putting in front of me to see like, does it stand like the heat test? And then after like cutting the check and investing in the company, it becomes like you are damn near a consultant for whatever the hell they need done. Wow. And I say that was like beautiful because like you recognize that starting a company is like, there is no framework. Like everyone has ideas about what it takes to be there. And in reality, like every entrepreneur is just so different, and learning to support and like help out those entrepreneurs, like I think changed my perspective on how I look at building businesses now. So a lot of it was a lot of thought and a lot of thought work and just trying to figure out how do you help somebody when you've already like given them money and understand that money is not the end all be all. It takes a lot of other support outside of that. So that was a lot of my job, meeting dope entrepreneurs and then trying to figure out how do I help them.
Wow, that's strong. So I want to talk about yours because you didn't stop there. Obviously, you went on to other greater things. But before we go there, so you plugged into this community, right? VCs are a close-knit community where like everyone kind of knows each other and you're right in there. So how is venture capital for Black entrepreneurs?
Wow. Good question, man. And I'll be honest in that, just like in America, man, it is tough, for lack of better words. Like, I think the most disheartening thing I saw as an investor, and it doesn't say anything about Initialized, but more so just like the overall culture of like BC, is just that like, you'll see the most scrappy, smart Black person come to the table with a well thought out idea, much more attractions than their counterparts of other ethnic groups, and still get a no in terms of like not investing in that company. I think that was like very disheartening because like me being Black, like part of the reason why I came there was because I enjoy the idea of like helping and supporting Black people build businesses as well, because we need the support. Everyone else gets to go to family and friends, get $500,000 to go out and build their business. We have to start with nothing and create something that can outcompete the other people who have millions of dollars to do it. So it was like tough on the emotional side for me, recognizing that only 1% of venture capital goes to Black people, despite us accounting for 13% of the economy. Wow. It was emotionally tough there. So I guess I spent a lot more time trying to get closer with Black entrepreneurs, Black investors who have the understanding that there is a void and a lack of opportunity for us in those sort of entrepreneurial seats, and try to close that void as much as possible.
That's great. I didn't know how bad it was till I read Arlen's book. It's About Damn Time. And yeah. I was in San Francisco all these years and I saw it with my own eyes, but I still, it's something else when you see the numbers surrounding it and the people who actually live through it, both as business and as entrepreneurs. So that was, because I also did like a company, but we never got to the funding rounds, so we never really had to go through that. But yeah, at the same time, it's like, I don't know if I would have been able to handle it, you know?
I think I'll push back. You can handle whatever you want to do. I'll say that a decision whether or not you want to handle it is the way I would phrase it. Like, as a Black person, and if I'm correct, you're Nigerian. What's your ethnicity?
I'm Nigerian.
Yes, like you
100%.
So like one thing that like I'll say is just that like by default we come from a strong group of people, man. I'm Black and African American, you're Nigerian. In both cases, origins are very similar, and you come from not easy grounds. And you can deal with it. It's just a decision whether or not you want to deal with it. And I think that's the deciding factor. It's going to be tough, and life is going to be tough, but you just have to decide which battles you want to fight.
I definitely agree with that. And I think that goes for just Black people in the United States right now, living life at any point. So this year's been tough, right?
Yeah.
For every single Black person. This year has just been crazy and tough.
Yep.
But you know, people like you inspire me, and just looking around where you can be dealing with all these things. And for people that don't know, you kind of went out to some of the protests in Oakland. You got tear gas, pepper sprayed at this peaceful protest, right? And it's like, no one would ever know that. You're out here trying to start a company. You're also out here fighting for your life. And it's crazy.
I'm reflecting on a conversation I had earlier today. And one of the Black founders in my cohort with TechStars, he said that being a Black person in this country is understanding that you have a dual identity. At work, you have to like calm down your Blackness, and in the real world, you can't calm down your Blackness. And understanding that when you step outside of those doors of your company, no one cares about what company you work for. All they see is the Black person in front of them. And that comes with all of the stereotypical things that they see on TV about Black people. So like when I hear, I've blocked out like getting tear gas that day, going out to those protests, because like it's just such a traumatic event, man. But like I think about what it means to be a Black person, but also what it means to be an entrepreneur in this space, is that you as an entrepreneur are fighting for what you want to see the world to be. Whatever that may be, you have decided that you want to see the world change in some way, shape, or form, and you're risking your life to try to do that. Same thing out there when you're protesting, man. And I hate to like try to equate the two, like one, people are dying on these streets at the hands of X, Y, and Z. We don't have to get into that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like the same level of drive and ambition around like solving a problem, I think is the common thread there, which is like those people out there protesting, you're looking to solve a problem. Same thing on the entrepreneurial side, you're looking to solve a problem. And like when you understand that, like you're dedicating your life to solving a problem, it doesn't become as burdensome. It's just like, it's a part of the game.
Definitely, definitely. So there's this view. So I'm Nigerian. So my entire experience with this whole thing is still different in that I'm African. I still speak my native language, in that when I go back home, I may be somewhat of an outsider, but as soon as I start speaking the language, I'm accepted. But, Black people don't have that option. So you really mentioned something that was strong about, you know, solving a problem. Do you think, how closely related is capital to this problem we have, in that, let's just say Black people are as rich as white people, do you think a lot of the problems we're seeing today would be reduced?
That is a question that I am personally excited about. And I say that because my whole business is around like capital, damn near. But before getting into my business, I don't think that will solve all the issues. I don't think that money is going to solve all of the issues. However, I think that with money, we can create a lot more change. Some of the barriers that we like are running against, aka like the school to prison pipeline, and thinking about like the fact that we don't own our own communities, and therefore we can't change our own communities. And how does that trickle down into all these other things? But more importantly, when you aren't owning your communities, you don't have a say over the police department or government and so forth and so forth. So I think like, the way that I try to frame it is just that I don't know what it will take to have equality, but I do know that money and capital is going to be useful in getting to that point. Whether it's, hey, we're going to go out and build a whole new country, or whether it's, hey, we're going to stay here and fix what's in front of us, no matter what, all change is going to come through having the funds to support that change. And that's how I sort of like break it down. Like, I'm not an expert on like social movements or whatnot, but I do know that every social movement had a funder, as in somebody financially supporting that movement. Whether it is Christopher Columbus coming to the Americas and getting here and quote unquote discovering it, he had somebody invest in his expedition. And that's how I think about it, that all change is gonna come through having the capital to create that change.
I have this whole philosophical just view on it, on just, you know, control the capital, people. I don't know, I say it and it kind of sounds like dirty capitalist, which just is that. I just think about it as like, go live in Africa for a bit. Like we just own things. Yeah. And that's something else that being in the United States, I'm like, okay, I have to just replicate. I have to own buildings. I have to own businesses. I have to own companies. So I don't know. I guess there's no, I don't see that roadblock of not being able to do it. I just see my parents, they owned it in Nigeria. Why can't I come over here? It may be a new land, but why can't I own all those things there? Also, yeah. Here also.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we can probably talk on that like forever.
But yeah, I can move on. On that one, man.
let's look into the future, man. So from VC to founder, so what are you working on, man?
Yes.
Most importantly, why are you doing this?
I'll start with the why, man, because that means a lot more than the what for me. Why I've decided to go on this journey of being a founder is because I recognize that the change that I want to see, I cannot create as a investor. And I say that because the companies that are getting funded are not serving my community. So at my core, I am glued to the idea that I want to see people that look like me live a better life. And I reflect on like my sort of rough upbringing. I grew up extremely poor. I moved out of my mom's house when I was 13. And I think about all of my friends who don't have the luxury of being able to go out to the world and create what they want to see. And I think that is sort of like my North Star. It's just that my friends who've had to live rougher lives they don't have the same privilege that I do. And I think that it is like a beautiful burden to carry, in that like, I recognize I'm very privileged to be in this situation, despite like the hardships, I'm very privileged. But more importantly, like, it is my duty to make it a better life for everyone else who wasn't able to get this far in their journey. And I say that because like, I reflect on my middle school best friend who's like literally in jail for life right now. And I think about all of the hard decisions he had to make to survive. And like, people love painting people in prison as like, yo, he's a terrible person. But at the end of the day, like, he had to do what circumstances were in front of him. I'm not saying that I agree with those decisions or whatnot, but in any case, like, there are sometimes when people don't have options. And I think about that, imagine if he did have options. Imagine if he came from a world where he didn't see his mom struggling financially his entire life. If he saw other opportunities that he can go out and be a doctor or entrepreneur or whatever the hell he wants to be, whether it's a construction worker or not, like, it doesn't matter. But understanding that people don't see opportunities in front of them, how do you create those opportunities? And going back to like my initial statement of like, I think capital is going to be the foundation to whatever opportunities we see in front of us. So, long-winded way to say that why I started this is because I recognize that there is no other way for me to create the change that I want to see in the world.
Wow. That's, wow. if that isn't just, okay, wow. So what are you doing
about
it?
Yes, what? I am building a social savings app. Very simple product, but at its core, it is a product that allows people to save money together with the additional features of security and transparency that we all need. So I'm generally speaking, targeting young people in this country who are college educated and are looking to figure out how do they make money for themselves. And one of those like overhanging burdens is recognizing that we don't have the same buying power and luxury as the generation before us. So what Unit is an app where you set a common goal of like, hey, me and my friends are going to save $50,000. Why are we going to save $50,000? We're going to save $50,000 so we can go out and buy a property. So about more than half of our users at this point in time are saving to buy property with their friends. Wow. So the way I keep thinking about it is like an intimate version of like a GoFundMe blend with Venmo, which is like social but also collaborative. So it's a savings app that allows you to save money with your friends. Nobody can take money out of anybody else's account. However, everybody gets an idea of what we are saving for, how much we are doing, but more importantly, holding each other accountable to sticking to those saving goals. So it's sort of like Weight Watchers, but for finance.
Nice. So when you just brought that up right now, I'm thinking about, there are a lot of things going up in my head that I'm thinking about right now, because I did work at a fintech.
NerdWallet, yes.
Yeah, I worked at NerdWallet, and you're connected to one of the co-founders, right?
Yes. That's yes, cool. I am.
You plugged in, man. okay, so what's your goal for this app? So what do you think? I don't really want to ask you what your success looks like for launching this app, but what would make you happy once you get this into the hands of people?
What would make me happy is recognizing that people all around the country, despite their socioeconomic status, aka minorities, are able to create the change that they want to see in their own communities without having to go and beg a bank to fund that change. And I keep thinking about a proposal that I put together in high school where there was no grocery store within a 5-mile radius of where I lived. So what I did was make a little petition, start sending this around the community, and tried to open up a grocery store. And I said, hey, if everybody in this community chips in $5 for 6 months, we will have a grocery store, because that will give us enough money to build the grocery store. That didn't go through because there was no way to facilitate that sort of collaboration. So long story short, the idea is just that I want to allow or create a tool so that people can find ways to fund whatever they want to fund in their own communities. More importantly, invest in whatever they want to do. So the ideal world, these people will be able to recognize that, hey, we don't have a liquor store in our own neighborhood that we own, or we don't have a grocery store, we don't have a movie theater. Cool, so let's all pull our money together. We'll do this for 6 months. And within 12 months, we'll be able to open that grocery store to serve our own communities. I keep thinking about allowing or creating a tool that allows people to facilitate that change that they want to see. Whether it's, hey, I just want to save and buy property with my friends. Or, hey, I want me and this whole community to open a grocery store in this neighborhood. Or, hey, there's somebody in this group who's good at stocks. So, why don't you take all this money and throw this into the stock market? The long-winded way to say that down the line, I want this to be a collaborative investing platform where you can invest in whatever you want and do that with the security and safety that you need to make it happen.
So that's powerful. There are two things I want to touch on there. And then one of them will be an example that actually just hit me. So there's this African market in downtown LA that my family, we've been going to since we've been here. And last time I stepped foot in there was in college. Went in there, bought my yams, I just bought everything, that I would normally get. And, the owner was this African guy, and they had this Latino guy who kind of assisted them. So, but then I went back recently. I haven't been there for years, and I went back recently, I think last month. Mm-hmm. And walking into the store, I saw no Africans running an African store, and that just kind of, okay, this was the weirdest thing, in that the lines outside were all Africans because of the coronavirus, so people were kind of getting in line to buy, so there's a limited number of people allowed into the store. Mm-hmm. But inside the store, it's being ran by non-Africans. And that was just really confusing for me. So I just asked my mom, what happened to the guy that I've known for many years, and what just happened? And she said the supply chain all the way from Africa needed funding, but the guy went to every single bank, no one would fund him. He went around to his family, no one would fund him. He went around to his community, and no one would fund him. His assistant, right? His assistant then went around to his community, and his community decided to fund him. And he decided to take over the store. This is a store that I've never seen empty in the years that I've been going there. It's just kind of like the de facto store for everyone inside that community. So I've been thinking about that since I went weeks ago.
Yeah.
And you bringing up this idea now just links back to something I've always told my friends, is that do things together. Literally, so not only is it, forget about the feel good. Let's just talk about the math, and let's just talk about
math. There we go.
Let's talk about it from a risk perspective.
Yeah. Right?
And so this is what happened. So my girlfriend was, she graduated with a nursing degree, right? And she was kind of going through school and she decided to switch to computer science. And I decided to fund everything. And I was, I had some coworkers at the time and they didn't understand why I decided to like help her through that. And I was just like, it doesn't matter if we're going to be together for like 4 years. What just matters is if she's able to make that switch, our income is literally, no, people don't get it. It's short term. A lot of people think short term. So I'm like, okay, right now she doesn't have an income because she's trying to go through school. But if I fund like whatever she's doing now to just so she focuses on studies and she doesn't have to do anything. And as soon as she graduates, literally doubles overnight. And that's exactly what happened. Now, a year later, literally working, a year later, buy a house. A year later. And this is the thing about risk that I explain to people is that if you buy a property by yourself, you're taking on 100% of the risk. If you buy a property with your friends and family, if it goes down under, you've invested a small portion. Instead of, let's say, instead of putting a 70K down payment, you put down a 10K with seven people.
You said 70K, so this brings up another story. So like last year, end of the year, I fundraised with my closest boys.
Yeah.
What I did was I created a model, created a presentation, and was just like, yo, if we get 80K between the, I think it was seven of us. Like if we get 80K between the seven of us, we can buy this property that will for the rest of our lives pay us money. More importantly, anytime we need to reinvest into that property, it is not going to be just one person's burden. It'll be the five of or seven of us, which makes it so much easier for us to just do this together. And I was just like, yo, by the way, this is how companies are built. It is quite literally trying to find those four or five people who are like willing to go to bat with you, buy something and let that crap grow over time. So like when you said 70K, I was just like, wow, like I raised 80K with the guys to buy an apartment building for that exact reason.
It's definitely, I don't know. I've been having a lot of trouble just getting that point across to some people in that I still have some friends that are, you know, they've been getting money since middle school, but it's, where's the money? You know, what have we built since then, right?
Yeah.
So when it's time to actually save up, and it kind of hurts if I'm being honest, but anyway, we could probably talk about this forever, but let's go back to you, man. So you have this idea to just sort of build communities around money, basically, and have communities sort of share their resources and be able to accomplish more together. Mm-hmm. So where are you in the stage with the app right now?
Yes. So we are in development mode now. We just finished TechStars. We raised to go out and build the business.
Wow.
At least like the early stages of it.
So did I miss my chance?
What?
To get in.
Oh, to invest. What to join.
To invest.
No. We'll talk about that offline.
Okay. Wow. Amazing.
So now where we are at, we're about to launch in probably about 2 weeks. I ran a few betas where I was just testing us out with a smaller group of people. About 800 people. But in any case, testing it out and then recognize that there is a way that I can make this happen. So from there, decided to go to TechStars. So I just finished up TechStars Western Union. And now we're about to launch the app and start testing it to see how does the general population receive it? Because before it was a closed beta where I'm like, hey, unless you know me or know somebody that directly knows me, I won't like allow you to check it out. And now it's to the point where like I'm comfortable throwing this app into the wild and letting the world determine where it goes. So yeah.
Wow. So is it gonna be launched in a couple of weeks?
Yes.
Oh, so it's gonna be launched by the time this episode goes out. So hopefully we can get the
probably yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Wow. So for context, everyone, I seem surprised right now. That's because a couple months ago when we met up at a coffee shop, we were just drawing. We were literally just drawing.
Yes. I kid you not, for everybody there, I called and reached out to Tolu because I was just like, I don't know many engineers who I can talk to like think through this problem. So not only was I low-key trying to like convince him to join my team, but also it was like, hey, help me think through this. And that was probably back in February where we sat down in a coffee shop. I was like, I have this idea. Here's what I'm doing now. You built something before, but also you worked at NerdWallet. Tell me, like, help me figure this out. So literally was going to him to try to figure out like, what are my next steps? What sort of engineers do I need? How should I build this product to make sure it's scalable and so forth and so forth? And
I don't think you've digested the fact
processed all of this. No, I haven't. Wow. It's not until now where I'm recognizing like I've definitely shared like, yes, I had my hardships, but I also have like a beautiful privilege in that like there is somebody in my network that I can just ask like, hey, come sit down with me, sit down for an hour. This was your work day as well. Like you took probably like an hour out of your work day to come and sit down.
That was my lunch.
Yeah, there we go. Your lunch. Wow. To come and sit down when like there was no benefit to you for that, like for that conversation. It was straight sheer like, hey, I want to help Philip figure this out. And that was it. And I just keep reflecting, like, it's not until now where I'm reflecting on just like the privilege it is to have people in your network who you can just lean on for support. Going back to like the business, but also just like even making this happen. So, wow, like I have not had to think about that until now. Damn.
I'm just really proud right now. The progress y'all have made. We can catch up on that later, but let's go back on track. We've gone so off course, but so how do you spend your time now as an entrepreneur? And how has the coronavirus kind of changed your day to day?
I'll start with the first question. How do I spend my time? I'm a very disciplined / like militant type of person. So I guess on a regular day, I wake up at 6, I'll do like my stretching, I'll make me an ice dirty chai, I'll make my bed, and then probably sit down at the computer around 8 o'clock after going for like a 30-minute walk. 8 o'clock is pretty much just trying to solve whatever is the most important fire to put out today. And I say that because every single day, it is a total different problem you have to solve. Some problems are going to take you a few weeks to solve. Some problems are going to take a few months to solve. But in any case, it's just waking up every day to decide which problems am I going to try to solve today. And when I think about that for like my business, it's like, hey, trying to figure out the banking side. How do you like make sure all these accounts are secured? The development side, how do you get the app actually built? So I can't say that there is one specific thing or day-to-day. It's just every single day, it's a new problem, new task that you have to solve if you want to like make this idea a reality.
Wow. So you're basically doing everything right now as the founder.
Yeah.
You have to do everything.
Yeah, exactly. I have to. Now I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where I'm hiring for my first engineer. But before, like until that person comes on, it's like me with the support of like mentors and stuff, obviously trying to make this a reality. So yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Awesome. So let's switch a little bit out of... So you also have a newsletter.
Yes, I do. Out,
right? Are you, yes. Did you forget about that?
No, I did not forget. It's crazy because I haven't. Everyone, I started blogging back in August of 2019. I was doing about an article a week, sending it out directly to friends that I know, just sharing my thoughts. Stopped doing that around February when I recognized that is writing does take time. So one, applaud you for sticking to it. But more importantly, I'm still working on a business. And I'm like, okay, what's more important? What's going to bring more value to the world? And I think it's like my company right now. So I haven't wrote in a few months, but it was literally just last week where an old friend hit me up out of the blue and was just like, hey, I haven't been getting any articles. What's going on? And I was just like, crap. Like I have not updated the blog in a while. So I will probably, by the time this episode comes out, I'll probably have another article out because I haven't written in so long, man.
So let's talk about writing for a bit because I love writing. I've tried to get myself to stop writing for a while. In college, I mean, let's just rewind. Middle school, I had a blog, closed it down. High school, had a blog, closed it down. College, nice. Had a blog, closed it down. But this time, just this February, and I think it was right after chatting with you, I just decided it's time to open it back up again. And this time around, I'm just, my number one goal is to just not close it. So yeah. I've been sending out the newsletters since then. But let's talk about writing. What's the importance of writing?
For me, For me, the real important, like I started blogging for very specific reasons. One was that I recognized that the access of information that I have, most of my friends don't. So how do I share everything that I have so that my friends can go out, take that information and flip it however they want to flip it? And then on the more personal front, I recognize that I have anxiety or I get nervous when like sharing my ideas. And I was just like, I have a lot of ideas in my head that I think other people can benefit from hearing. So how do I build up the courage of like sharing those ideas? So it was a lot of like mental work for me to just say, hey, like even just saying publish, like it was like anxiety inducing almost. But I say like the importance of it all was like one, communicating like what can be done based on everything that I'm seeing in front of me to my friends. Separately was like building courage. Separate and most important was like it was me proclaiming my goals out to the world. So every blog was talking about like, hey, like here's like a thought process that I'm going through right now. It's causing me, it's like making me a bit nervous, but I want to share this with you all so that you guys understand where I'm coming from. But hey, in 2 months, I promise you, I'm gonna have something done. So it was like always like a way to like throw my goals out there to the world. And then because I'm sending this to so many people who are like actually close to me, everybody will follow up and be like, yo, Phil, it's been 2 weeks. You said you were gonna have something done. Have you done it? And like the biggest thing for me, I guess like one of my ultimate fears in life is saying I'm going to do something and not doing it. Like I recognize how powerful of a force that is for me. So I was just like, cool, I'm gonna start saying all my goals, throwing them out there for all my friends to hold me accountable. And then when I recognized that people were actually checking up on these goals and stuff, I was just like, oh crap, like there's like a cycle. You say it, people listen, people will respond however they want. But at the end of the day, it'll be randomly, it'll come up in conversation later. And for me, that was like one of the most powerful things from the whole blogging experience was like, I get nervous about it every single time that I'm pushing an article out. However, recognizing that my friends were like checking up on me to see like, yo, did you do what you said you were going to do? Like that, bro, I remember I wrote a blog post right after leaving Initialized. And I was explaining how like, it's been rough. It's been not Initialized, but like emotionally, I've been like rough. Like it's going through like a damn near mental breakdown, but here's how I'm thinking of digging myself out of it. I think probably like 70% of the people I sent that out to all followed up, responded, and were just like, yo, Phil, like what's going on? I'm here to help. And recognizing that you have a support system out there, like it is night and day, man. So blogging for me was a lot of personal, but also like sharing with other people the ideas I have in my head. So that is like how I took the importance of writing, man. But I guess what, for you, the importance of writing?
So the biggest thing for me is that my brain is always running 24/7. And yeah. Something I figured out was, so I don't know if you're ever next to me or anything, you'll see I always have some kind of notebook and I have physical check marks on everything, right? I draw mm-hmm. the whatever I need to do. And what I noticed is that as soon-
In here, actually.
Man, I'm saying, as soon as I write it down on paper, that frees up the space in my brain for something else. So when it came to like writing about investing, first of all, I'm reading all these books. I always just have all these books around me and I'm reading them all the time. Mm-hmm. So writing is a way for me to kind of transfer what I've learned from these books and these financial papers into, you know, a written
format. Practice for you.
Right? Like I would write these things and, you know, I'm placing bets all the time as an investor. You're just placing bets.
Yeah.
And it's, writing is just, I don't know. I have something that I say, read less, write more, because I can spend all day reading. But like actually writing has been so beneficial for me simply because it helps me, it takes me to the next level in understanding what I read or what I'm thinking. I don't know how to explain it.
I'll split that back to you. And the way that like what I just took from what you said is that like the reading is like the brainstorming. The writing is like, cool, this is about to happen. This is how you take it into practice now. Like you can read 100 things. 100 things are not going to be all important. Two or probably like, hopefully like a bit more, but like 2 or 3 of those things are going to be important from that whole 100 bucket that you just picked up. How do you make that stick?
Yeah.
Fixed by writing and like actually executing it. So like, that's what I hear when I hear you say that, man.
I definitely agree. And even after writing, I think I got this from the, from one of the co-founders of Stripe. After writing, read your writing, anything you don't remember, delete it.
Yep.
That's the most difficult thing to do, but that's just helped so much.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of like the reason why I write.
I love it. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was therapy for me. I need to get back into the writing, honestly. Like, yeah. I have so much, like, so many reflections that, like you've noticed from this damn call alone, like, yeah. So many reflections that I have not had the opportunity to process yet because I'm just running at, like, 90 miles per hour. Like, I think I really need to get back into some writing.
Even if you don't publish it, just write it and just keep it for yourself. I highly recommend that. Let's move on. So you're a founder now. So again, going back, so this newsletter and this podcast specifically was started for people to start thinking about finance, personal finance for themselves, diversifying their income, investing, really all that good stuff, right? So as a founder now, what does your income look like? Because you're not isn't non-existent. I know why you're laughing, but like, just explain to people. So the biggest thing about entrepreneurship is that you're taking a leap of faith, right?
Yes.
Just kind of jumping into it. So what does all that look like? What has changed in your life?
What has changed in my life? I am broker than I have ever been. At the same time, I have never been this happy. And it's like a beautiful balance to strike because, like, leaving undergrad, my goal was to make as much money as possible, period. Like, I will be very honest in that. Like, my goal was to make as much money as possible. And then I recognize that, like, what is all this for? Like, and I say that to say, like, I'm broker than I've ever been, but at the same time, happier than I've ever been as well. So now it's like, okay, how do I take this leap of faith, hope that it turns into something profitable so that I can then get back to investing, which is like the security in life. So huge leap of faith, like you said, because I've never made nothing. And that's what I'm doing now, hoping that like in 2 years or so, I'll be able to pay myself like a reasonable salary to keep the ball rolling. So yeah, broke. I appreciate
it. Amazing. How do you spend your personal time? If you have personal time.
Coronavirus has really forced me to think about that a lot more, like being locked in the house, not able to go out and socialize. You have to figure out like what keeps you happy. Personal life now is, I would say, I'm running a lot more than I used to before the pandemic. I am doing a lot more deep reflecting around like trauma, but also areas of growth. It's sort of a hobby. I'm reading a lot more, but also investing in like my friendships more than I have in the past. Always going back to damn near the North Star with Unit, but also my personal life, like community. So those I would say are like the bigger things. I don't have much personal time at this stage in my life. But when I am able to like carve out time, it's somewhat around like clearing my head and trying to find ways to like make sure that I'm still checking in with friends and stuff. So
amazing. So let's talk about friends for a bit. So I got something off of your Twitter.
Oh, crap.
Was like,
okay, what was that?
Let me see. So this is your pinned tweet.
Oh, okay.
I believe it says the most important things, like the most important choices are how you spend your time and who you spend your time with. And honestly, this sounds like something Nival would put out, but this but this is by Philip. So just diving into that a little bit. Tell me about that tweet and why you have it pinned.
Yeah. I think that tweet came at a time in life where I recognized that I'm not here to just make money. I'm here for a bigger purpose. And money is the byproduct of finding that purpose and getting there. But going back to the tweet specifically, I recognize that like at the core of our like existence almost, like it's not who's the smartest, it's not who's the hardest worker. It is literally what you are dedicating your time to and the people you surround yourself with. Mm-hmm. And like by solving those two questions, you are able to get as far as you want to go. And it goes back to like, hey, like me having a North Star for my business at the same time, making sure that I'm surrounded by the community that I want to serve. So I like, that's something like that idea is something that I wear on my sleeve now, is just like, yeah, there are plenty of people who are much smarter than me. There are plenty of people who work harder than me, but my goal is not to be the hardest worker, the smartest person. My goal is to spend my life doing something that I care about. And more importantly, doing that with the support of people around me, AKA my community. So that's where that tweet really came from, because I feel like in life we go through these periods of time where we seek external validation, whether it's like, hey, by the way, you're at Google, good job. And you're like, okay, Google doesn't really matter that much, but I'll accept the compliment. And like, we live in this cycle of trying to get approval from other people. And when I recognize that I don't like value that approval anymore, what is it that I value? I value the happiness that comes with trying to solve something that you want to see in the world. But more importantly, solving that with your boys or your friends or whatever the case or not. And I was just like, yo, when I recognize that like the ultimate joy in my life is doing something, accomplishing it with my friends, I was just like, yo, that's really what I care about. Goes back to me raising money to buy that apartment building, goes back to what I'm building now, but also like how I operate in my personal life. It is, we all have a theme in our lives, and I'm trying to fine tune that theme to make sure it's in line with what I care about in reality.
Powerful. That was really powerful, man. Okay, so we're wrapping up here. What are you the most excited for about the future?
I'll stay away from the business because I'm excited about a lot of stuff in the business. Personally, man, I am very excited about how I see people in my generation responding to what's in front of them. And I say that because like it's sort of like infectious right now. Like all of my friends are at a stage, like even you, for example, like at a stage in life where it's like, yo, I got to do something. I've checked off going to the good schools. I checked off getting the good jobs. Now that we're past that, what do I really care about? Like you, as an example, taking this idea, like, yo, I have a lot of finance tips I want to share with the world. Pushing that out so that other people can reap the benefits of like the hard work that you put in. So that goes back to like literally looking at like my peers and recognizing that all of us are fighting for something right now, whether it is like creating financial equity, whether it's sharing their knowledge, whether it's going out and painting their own communities. Like we are all sort of fighting for something right now. And it's like, despite this whole journey of like being an entrepreneur, you feel alone. But then when you open that door and you recognize that all your friends are out in the street fighting for something as well, it's like the most humbling, but also the most exciting part of this whole game. It's just that we are all trying to change something that we want to see in the world. And like, wow, that's powerful, dog. Like that is like single-handedly what makes me so happy. Even when I think about like UNIT, like it is people deciding that I want to fight for something. And that's, hey, I want to go out, build some wealth for my family so that we don't have to struggle anymore. Let's do that together. And like how this translates, it's just such a common theme right now. Everybody like deciding I want to do something, creating the plan and going out to execute it. That is what's making me happy right now, man.
Wow. Honestly, I really hope we can look back on the future and this episode is famous because of you, because you've already made it. And people are like, who was Philip before the fame? And,
yo, by the way, everything. This is the first time I've like got on any sort of like external facing anything to share like ideas about like my stuff. So like,
it's natural. No, you're doing really well. It just comes natural. You can see that you were born to lead. You're answering this, you're not stuttering, you're just all out there, man. It's amazing. So what are some books that have changed your life, man? You read? Wait, first of all, let's back up a little bit.
Yes. Single day I start off with this book, which is called The War of Art. For anybody, it sounds like you were about to ask, like, what book would I recommend? Was that?
Yeah, I want to talk about that later, but tell me why you read, first of all.
This book specifically is about fighting through or getting through those sort of, like, personal battles that we all have. Procrastination, self-doubt, whatever it may be. Basically, it's the journey of an artist, as in, like, yo, an artist decides to wake up every single day, dedicate their life to their art, and don't care about anything else. And like, that is the level of like discipline and drive I want to have around everything that I do. I dedicate my life to it because I want to see that done. And this book is just literally every single day, a different passage or a different way to think about how you dedicate your life to solving something, whether it is creating art in your room or creating a business that you hope can change the world. But every morning I read this book.
Amazing. So, just clarifying the old question that I asked is that A reason I asked that is because I send my friends books, and there are times when I would send out, you know, they come over, they see my library, they grab a book, and then they don't expect me to check up. How can I send you a book and you don't expect? So I check on them. Oh, how do you feel about this book that I sent you? It's not like I want the book back or anything. Let's just discuss this book.
Yeah.
And it's like, they haven't read it. And that's something I'm just, why did you take the book off my shelf? It was doing better on my shelf than what it's doing in your in your apartment now. So it's basically what I was trying to get to is that everyone needs to read. There are people, I didn't like reading either when I got out of college, but that's because I didn't know what the value of reading was.
Yeah. And
literally, it boils down to learning in a few hours what it took people a lifetime to learn.
That is the most beautiful way I've ever quite literally heard reading explained.
That's it for me.
Taking what somebody else took 10 years to understand, and you get that in a week.
Yes, that's it. I strongly recommend, if anyone is listening to this and is still not reading yet, just personally message me and I can find you a first book. Always reading.
Always reading.
It's really important. There are times when it's, and this is the best thing that helped me stick with reading. Also got this on a different podcast, but also with the co-founder of Stripe, where it says, I was listening to it and he said, if you don't like a book, just put it down. And that never clicked for me, you know?
Yeah.
If you're reading a book, you don't have to finish.
Bad.
Yes. And that never clicked for me. And then you said that, I was like, you're right. If it's not providing me any value, just put it down.
I think that comes from a lot of our, like, you know, like, you start something, you finish it mentality, but also like striving for perfection in all ways. But yeah, like I recently put down my first book where I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to finish this. I'll probably never pick it up again. But like, yeah, literally.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. Let's actually go back to that question. So what are some must read books?
I would say one book that comes to mind, especially if somebody is like trying to get introduced to this idea of like, how do you think about finances, like on a personal level for building wealth, it would be, and I don't like the author because I recognize so many things, but in any case, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It is such a cliche book, but that book fundamentally changed my life. It taught me how you think about creating businesses compared to investing in businesses and how that is different from being an employee versus an owner. And I think that framework is still a framework that I think about today and fundamentally changed my life. After reading that book, I started my first company, for perspective. I started that first company at 13 after moving out of my mom's house. That's how inspiring that book was for me. So that book was powerful for a lot of reasons.
Philip, thank you so much for having this conversation with me, man.
Yo, brother, I appreciate you reaching out and thinking about me with this. I am excited as hell to see this come out, honestly.
Definitely. I'll let you know, man.
Appreciate you, brother. We'll be in touch.
Hello. Hope you enjoyed that episode. You can support the show by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts and leaving a review. We're also on YouTube if you'd like to watch us smile and laugh as you listen. Also subscribe to my premium newsletter at tolusnotes.com. That's TOLUSNOTES.com for timeless lessons for young investors. See you next week.